Justin Jefferson expectations, roster building philosophies, and of course, takes on the athleticism of old presidents. It is Twitter Tuesday here on the Locked On Vikings podcast.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Locked On Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hope everybody had a great 4th of July. Thank you so much for making Locked On Vikings your first listen of the day, each and every day. If you were off work, you didn't do your commute or whatever, you missed yesterday's episode, I would love it if you checked it out. It was a heartfelt love letter to John Randall. And I also apologize if you hear some banging and booming in the background. I'm recording this on the night of 4th of July. Fireworks are everywhere. We're all just going to have to deal with it together. But today is Twitter Tuesday, which means I'm answering your questions about this and that. Fewer questions today. Obviously, it was a holiday, which means I get to go more in depth on some of these, which should be pretty fun. But if you ever do have a question, you can send it to me at Locked On Vikings on Twitter or at Luke Braun NFL on Twitter. You can also send an email to lockedonvikingspodcast@gmail.com or fill out the Google form, which will be in the show notes of any old podcast. Get them in. But let's start with some of the more serious ones, and then we'll go to some weird ones. The first one I want to start with is from Bradley Knorr, who asked, how much more upside do you think Justin Jefferson has since he's already so good after only 2 years? What can he still improve on? So part of Justin Jefferson's game is kind of the lack of weaknesses. This is part of his pre-draft evaluation, too. It's like, there's kind of nothing that he's bad at. There's nothing to, like, exploit. And, you know, he's better at some things than he is at others. There's some stuff that's, you know, like yards after catch. He's fine at it, but he's not nearly as good at that as he is as, you know, setting up a good route stem or releasing off the line of scrimmage or, you know, his catch rate. I would say that the singular thing about Justin Jefferson that I think he could clean up to be a little better is drops. He has dropped a few too many for my liking. It's not a huge deal. It's not the end of the world or anything. He's still very much a good player. But if there was something to nitpick, I would probably say the dropsies. I mean, it's like you're really finding anything you can out of, at the margins, right? He's a fantastic player. And so I would say, like, I don't know what more upside you need. He's amazing. He's an elite player. He's there. Like, he's in the echelon of all the greats in the league right now. I don't think anybody would really argue with that. And then that's fine. And now it's just a matter of how long that, like, sustains. And, you know, can he stay healthy and all that stuff? And how long do we get this asset for? But, I mean, after this next year, now he's getting paid, and so now you're paying for an asset like that, which, by the way, totally worth it, but that kind of becomes the next conversation we'll have about Justin Jefferson. Moving on, Ragnar's Ghost says, what does a successful 2022 season look like for the new regime? This is always that expectations question. I mean, look. In their entire history, the Vikings have had one head coach come in and make the playoffs his first year, and that was Denny Green. And he took over a team that still had some pieces from the 80s left on it. You know, Keith Millard was still there, I'm pretty sure. No, he wasn't. He was already traded away, I think. But, you know, I mean, they still had some of the pieces. They were a little older now from those 80s teams that were, like, so good, and they were just a running back away, which is why they got Herschel Walker. Some of that made that roster feel like it was just a running back away was still on the team. And making the playoffs in 1992 was kind of a big reclamation moment for a Vikings franchise that was in dire straits. I mean, from like 88 to 91 might be the darkest period in franchise history. You might say, oh, what about the Les Steckel year? That was probably some of the worst play. They had a 3-13 year, but that was, I mean, Bud Grant retired, then had to come out of retirement. It was kind of a disaster, but you never felt like the franchise's, like, core and foundation as an organization was in trouble. Just kind of felt like, they're going through this weird chapter, and they'll pull out of it as soon as they figure out that Jerry Burns is the coach to hire. But kind of the end of Jerry Burns' era, before Denny Green came in, they were completely without an identity. Ownership was super dramatic. I mean, that was Mike Lynn had taken over an ownership stake. Two other owners were taking each other to court. Like, Max Winter sold his shares in 88, I think. And so there was this, like, 10-person oligarchy of owners all trying to make decisions, and there's all sorts of drama in politics, and it was like, are they going to sell the team? Like, what's going to happen? They didn't, they were trying to limp through with like Wade Wilson and Rich Gannon. And like, that clearly wasn't the quarterback thing. They didn't have nearly as much like superstar power as they would get, you know, later in the 90s. It was a dark period, and making the playoffs in 1992 was a huge moment. All of that said, I kind of just went on a tangent because I wanted to tell you about 92, but, all of that said, making the playoffs this year, I don't expect them to. And I don't think if they, I think if they don't, I won't be very disappointed, because I don't really think that they will. I mean, they haven't made the playoffs in 2 years. The roster lost a lot of defensive pieces. The secondary is like made out of rookies and reclamation projects. And the offense that has not been like an elite, you know, league burning juggernaut is just sort of running back, and maybe the different scheme will unlock things. I don't really buy it. But that's okay, because also they are installing a defense that takes some time to learn and takes some time to really get comfortable in. And so the early parts of the season, you're going to have defensive mistakes, and that's going to cost them games. And that's just part of transitioning from one defense to another. They're not going to just pick it up immediately and suddenly be elite. I don't think it would be responsible to expect that. So on the expectations for 2022, I don't know. I don't want to say numbers. I don't want to put like 7 wins on it or whatever. If they make the playoffs, that's incredible. But I think if they are a respectable team that looks like they have a direction that they're going in, if we enter next offseason going, Jesus, we have so many roster holes and we have to reconstruct this whole thing from scratch, and you know, Kevin O'Connell's on the hot seat because they won 4 games, and all, like if we're going into that, that's a disaster. So somewhere between those things. But I think it's going to be less about how many yards does the offense get or the defense allow, and how many wins do they get, and what's the, you know, did they make all of that stuff. Is sort of a, that's the end, and I'm focusing on the means. And I feel like if you feel like the team has the means, if we're coming out of next season going, yeah, they didn't make the playoffs, but there's those 2 games where they missed a field goal at the end, and you know, one of those other times they lost and it was a bad ref call, and you know, overturn one of those, maybe they make the playoffs. If we're having that conversation again, that basically means we have transitioned from the Mike Zimmer era into the Kevin O'Connell era without losing any momentum. And then year two for all these guys in the system, we can now project a whole bunch of improvements for like all the defensive players and the younger players and stuff. I would feel pretty good if we were there. So that's my realistic, super, like, this is what I actually think the Vikings can be. And if they are there, I'm going to feel decent about it. Obviously, if they make the playoffs, that would be incredible. And I do think they have the talent to be a playoff team, but with a brand new coaching staff and new scheme and new everything, it's just really hard to expect that. I have a bunch more questions to get to, but let me first talk to you about a good old gramble. If you want to gramble on anything, you can bet on football stuff right now. I mean, you can bet on who the MVP will be. You can go bet on Kirk Cousins at like plus 6,000 or whatever. You can go bet on week one, will they win against the Packers? You can bet on a whole bunch of stuff. NFC North odds, where everybody will finish. Will the Vikings make the playoffs? All sorts of that stuff. You can find all of that at betonline.net. You can build weird player props or even bet right in the middle of games or fights or anything. You got MLB and WNBA going on right now. There's, you know, UFC and MMA stuff going on. So you can bet on all that stuff at betonline.net. Where the game starts. Moving on with this Twitter Tuesday mailbag. The next one is a very interesting one that comes from RC Christensen, who says, do you believe that local fan interest is a reasonable factor for keeping one player over another? Either local fan interest from high school or college, because the fans just love the guy. So we're talking about the Adam Thielens and the CJ Hams, right? Who both of them have obviously earned their keep on total merit, but we're talking about that kind of thing. No. And I don't think teams really do that. And you know, they cut the hometown guy all the time. We just don't remember it as much. But you could make some argument, like if you were to make the opposite argument, you would say something, well, you know, that maybe they're worried about jersey sales or something like that, or they're doing that really to maximize the money. But I think at this point, like NFL teams and as organizations and the NFL as a whole is such a gigantic cash cow that those little decisions at the margins can kind of be just a drop in the bucket. And I think a healthy organization just leaves that up to merit. And here's the deal. Like Kevin O'Connell's not a Minnesotan. He coaches the Minnesota team now, but I mean, he was in LA before. Like, he is not a local guy with local ties. And I think as fans, we get a little bit too wrapped up in that. Like, the big one that I took issue with a couple years ago was Antoine Winfield Jr. I liked Antoine Winfield Jr. I had a high second round grade on him. That's about where he went. And I think he's pretty much played that out. But people were so mad that we didn't take him and we took Gladney instead, especially because Gladney didn't work out and Antoine Winfield did after his rookie year. And then obviously now this offseason passed away and it all got a little sadder. We kind of stopped talking about it. But like with Winfield, I need people to tell, okay, what about him was so good that you thought, like, tell me what your evaluation of him was. And honestly, if you really get down to it with these people, with a lot of people, it's they're Minnesotans and they wanted the Gopher. And you just got to, it's a check, you know? And if you're, like, I liked Winfield a lot, had a high second on him. It was awesome. Or Boye Mafe this year. Did you want Boye Mafe? Why did you want Boye Mafe? Like, what is it about Boye Mafe that made him a pick that you would have wanted over Andrew Booth or whenever they picked, right? Or Ed Ingram. Was he still on the board when they picked Ingram? Anyways, but like if you wanted Boye Mafe instead, great. Tell me why. But the hometown, well, he was a Gopher and then he can be a Viking. And how great is that? No, I don't think that carries a lick of value. And if any teams are doing stuff for that, that's a mistake. In the olden days, it's a little different. You go over like Jesse Tuggle for the Falcons or Carl Eller for the Vikings and a lot of guys that come from the Minnesota area because it was like genuinely a consideration of, well, do we want to buy this guy the plane ticket or do we just give the dude in Detroit Lakes a tryout? And when it comes to like the super, super, you know, we're talking rookie tryouts, you know, you don't want to buy 200 plane tickets, so get guys that are local and maybe one of those local guys makes the team. That's a little different. But, you know, that's either at the margins or going back 25 years in history when the finances of NFL teams were a lot different. Now, you bring in the best players you can and you fly them in from wherever the hell you can and you just, like pay for the freaking plane ticket. You're an NFL team. But, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on that. Brandon Fisher asks another one. I really like this one. If you were a GM, what is your team building philosophy? It's a very general question, but we got the time today because it's a holiday mailbag. So, if I were a GM, my philosophy would be pretty analytically driven for sure, but it would just be like data would inform philosophy. And data is a whole bunch of different things. I like the way Kwesi talks about it a whole bunch. And I've liked a lot more of his moves than I've disliked. It's unfortunately the moves that I've disliked have been like the biggest ones, but like in totality, I've liked what Kwesi has done so far. I think more than I've disliked it. And I think a big reason is because the way he talks about data, it's like we take in data, but everything is data. A coaching report is data. Film analysis is data. It's just the word we use for it's information, and you take in as much information as I can. So that's like the philosophy. I think you're probably asking a little bit more specifics, like would you focus on offense or defense or whatever? And I think all that stuff would be really secondary to here's the grand philosophy. So this one's going to blow your minds, y'all. It's going to be the most, it's the highest IQ idea you've ever heard. Your brains will explode. If you aren't high IQ enough to take in this idea, your brain will melt out of your ears. Find good players, keep good players. I know. It's way out there. And if you aren't smart enough, that one just sounded like alien language to you. I'm sorry. I apologize for that whole bit. No, but it's find good players, keep good players. And it's sort of never lose sight of that idea. It's, you know, don't take a player at a position of need, like don't go down a tier is the way that some GMs look at it, which is about the same idea, right? If you have, you know, tier one players, And all the tier one players at positions of need are gone, you know, say, they don't have any tier one guards. There's no tier one edge rushers or whatever the team needs. Don't go down a tier to get a player that you need. Take the good player. And if you have a redundancy, like I wouldn't fear redundancies at all because redundancies can turn into weapons really quick. You know, if you have Vita Vea on the same team as Akeem Hicks. Well, Akeem Hicks plays three techs, so that actually just would rule and you wouldn't have to do anything. But, you know, Vita Vea on the same teams as Michael Pierce, right? True nose tackle, zero technique guys. A, now they're both fresher. I can put them both at one technique. I can double the A gap, and I can put a whole bunch of stress on a protection that way. And then the way I construct the rest of my fronts and the rest of my rosters can be like tailor-made to counter what teams would typically do if they had two really, really big boys in each of the A gaps. They would probably condense their protections. They would condense their splits and stuff. And that give me a wide nine that can take advantage of that, right? Or somebody, you know, some real finesse rusher that can take advantage of that. That would be the team building philosophy. So it's fine, good players. And then if you have a good player, you do not let them out the building. This is where I get super annoyed, because we are going to watch for it. You watch next summer. We're going to have to pay Justin Jefferson. He's going to cost like $25 million a year or something. And it's going to be really expensive. And I am going to preach that it is worth it. There is no price. Like, until you get beyond the pale video game numbers, until you start to pitch things that aren't realistic, I'm going to be like, sign that dude to whatever he wants. Back it up. And you keep that dude in the building. Danielle Hunter should retire a Viking. Harrison Smith is going to retire a Viking. And that's good. I love that. You know, your best players should retire a Viking. Letting those guys go, like, he's good, but he's expensive, is a great way to make your team suck ass constantly. And I see so many people, you know, a great player gets a good extension, and so many people are like, oh, but that's, you know, that's top eight money. And do we really think he's a top eight player? I think he's more of like a top 12 player. Like, oh my God, shut up. He's good. Pay him. That's how it goes. And understanding the markets too. Like, the 12th best player can get the highest contract if he signs after the top 11 players did. That's just how it works. And it's just what people cost. And I would definitely be a guy that's like, F that cap space, right? I would be up against it every year, and I think that's great, because it means I've got good players, right? If I have to pay them, it means they're good. I would probably be a little bit F them picks, a little bit like the Rams, because veteran players are just like, a guy who's proven is just worth something. And I think there's actually a market inefficiency there. I think proven guys are, you know, Calais Campbell going for fifth round picks just because he's got a contract is like kind of insane to me. Yeah, that's my philosophy. Do whatever you can, get good players, don't let anything burn a hole in your pocket, and then keep those guys in the building for as long as you can, and you should probably have a pretty good roster. I have a whole bunch more questions. Many of them are fun. Some of them are serious. So we're going to keep going with that. But first, let me talk to you about your car, because your car is important and you should take good care of it. Now, if you're a do-it-yourselfer and you're looking for a place to get auto parts, Rock Auto is like the place for it. It's like, they have everything you could possibly need. Just enter your make, your year, and your model, and make sure you're getting something that's like compatible with your car, and it'll ship right to your doorstep. You can even do that as a little life hack to get cheaper repairs if you need them. You know, get like a mechanic is going to upcharge you. You might spend 30, 50, even 100% more on the exact same part from the same building, same manufacturer, and everything, but they're going to upcharge you. Or you can go to Rock Auto, get that thing delivered to your door, and then just say, hey, can I just pay you to install this? Don't go to an auto shop and ask if they have the part in the back, and then they got to ship it and charge you to ship it, of course. None of that. Rock Auto's got you covered. And whatever you get at rockauto.com, make sure you let them know that Locked On sent you. Because if you don't, the rabbits will never stop the war that they have started in the streets of Los Angeles. You can hear it behind me. Rock Auto, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Moving on with this Twitter Tuesday mailbag, next one comes from Ben Olson, who says, give me an undrafted free agent signing that makes the 53-man roster. So I think the answers you would get from most people would be Luigi Villan or Zach McLeod. Those are the two that the Vikings paid the most for. So that would imply that they're the most interested in those guys. But I think that might just be a market. Just more teams were interested in those guys. And yeah, more teams will generally be more interested in better players. But generally, usually, right? And here's the deal. I don't really see it with either of those guys. I kind of can tell why those guys went undrafted. My guy is going to be Mike Brown, the safety out of Miami of Ohio. He's 6'1", 222 safety, and he can play nickel too. He's got a little bit of versatility, and also that safety group has some room on it. You have, of course, Harrison Smith, you have Cam Bynum, you have Lewis Cine. Those are your three that will obviously make the team. And then after that, it's like Josh Metellus, who kind of his fourth safety, but he's only really getting that on special teams, and I don't know if they really trust him to be on the field all that often. They probably would rather not have that. And so if Mike Brown can really play up, I think there's a way to maybe push another defensive back, whether it's a safety or a corner, off the roster. I mean, you're competing with the Chris Boyds and stuff of the world. And so if he can have an impact on special teams, that's what it's going to come down to for all of these guys. I think that's the guy for me who can sort of surprise I'm better than Josh Metellus and actually knock him off. Another guy I really like for this is Bryant Kobach. The Vikings in the past have kept a lot of running backs. I think with Kevin O'Connell's scheme, I think a high volume of running backs on the roster would be helpful for fatigue reasons and just for weird usages of them and specialty things. And running backs are really useful on special teams. They can play all the special teams units. He's a running back out of Toledo. And, you know, there's also just like the random chance that they just decide, all right, we got a fourth running back on the team, you know, and then CJ Ham, which the last Vikings did a lot. And so I don't see why the new regime wouldn't do that also. So I could see Bryant Kobach carving his way out. But really, the answer to this is going to be who's best on special teams. And it could be the punter, but I don't really see it. The punter had the shank season in college once. And so, you know, he's going to probably have to be like picture perfect to do it. So I don't know about that. Next one comes from Kenneth John Bailey. Says, if you were stranded on a desert island, which current Minnesota Vikings player would you want to be stranded with? Za'Darius Smith feels like a good guy to be stranded on a desert island with, because there'd be some positivity to that, you know, some good energy. Justin Jefferson would be fun. There'd be a lot of energy. I don't know how much of a survivalist that guy is. I don't know if he's very much of a woodsyman. You know, that. So that's like, I need to know, like, who's the camper, who's the outdoorsman, who's the hunter, you know, that kind of thing. Somebody like Harrison Smith would probably do it. I'm pretty sure he's an avid hunter. I think he'd keep a level head, right? He'd keep everything grounded. He wouldn't go too crazy. And you'd have hopefully a little bit of survival skill in your corner. Charlie asks, which Viking could you eat in a hot, or could you beat in a hot dog eating contest? Probably none of them. I mean, who's the smallest, like the Greg Joseph, maybe? I don't know, like the kicker, but I don't think I could beat anybody in a hot dog eating contest. If I had like a third hot dog, I'm starting to feel like I'm getting the sweats, you know, like I would have to like train for it. Maybe if I trained for it, I could get something a little bit better, but man, you asked me this question 8 years ago and I'd be like, I've got the metabolism of a 22-year-old. Ho, ho, ho. Maybe I can do it. But right now, nah, I'm getting smoked by all 90 of them. Alec Thomas Fan Club says, who would win a Super Bowl first, George Washington or Theodore Roosevelt? So I imagine you mean as a coach, probably, because they were both like war generals before being presidents. Probably Teddy Roosevelt. He seems like he's the rougher around the edges type that would make a better coach, and George Washington, not quite so much. I think, George Washington's teams might be a little softer than Teddy's. So I guess I'll go with Theodore Roosevelt. As a player, I'm absolutely going with Theodore Roosevelt. Like, that dude was a fighter. I'll go with Teddy Roosevelt, but I don't feel that convicted, and if somebody has a better reason for it, I'd be open to hearing it. Forrester asks, best anti-war song that has been appropriated as a 4th of July celebration, haha, go America song. True, that does happen. The one that immediately comes to mind is Fortunate Son by Clarence Clearwater Revival. That is a scathing anti-war, very anti-America song. Like, that is very, but it says red, white, and blue and Hail to the Chief in the first verse. And it's on everyone's 4th of July playlist, which, you know what? Maybe they're all making a statement. We'll take it. So I'll go with that one. That's the first one that came to mind. It feels like a good answer. It's also a very good song. I like Clarence Clearwater Revival. Squeaks asks, how American are you on a scale of Daily Beer's shotgun per fingers lost to firework explosions? Can you tell that I did this mailbag and everybody asked their questions while they were at their 4th of July parties? I am... how American am I? I'm a born and bred American. I was born here. I only ever left the country a couple times as a kid on like vacations, but to like, you know, like a hotel in Jamaica kind of place. And then I went to Rome and Greece a couple years ago. Probably got COVID there. We're not sure. It was like right before everything shut down and we got really sick and we're not 100% sure if it was COVID, but we're like pretty sure it was. Anyways, that's the only times I've ever been out of America. So I'm that American. I have never shotgunned a beer. I've imbibed plenty, never shotgunned one. I don't even know how. But I do have a fireworks story that I can tell you. I think I was 11 years old. We have a family cabin in Wisconsin that was like kind of the lodge you go up to, that a lot of people in Minnesota have that. And we go up and we buy a bunch of fireworks and we'd set them off. That was our 4th of July tradition when I was a kid. And we had one, I still remember, it was called the Ladybug. And the Ladybug It's not a good idea. Don't get the ladybug, because the ladybug is, it looked like a little ladybug. It was like a little dome, kind of. And it would go spinning up, and it would like hover in the air a little bit and kind of do a light show, like spinning, and you ooh-ah, and then it would fire off and explode. The thing is, we were setting them off on like a beach. Maybe we had a piece of plywood down. I actually don't remember, but this was uneven ground. So as it hovered, it turned and actually pointed. And when it launched, instead of launching into the air, it launched directly into my shoulder. And I panicked and I froze up. I was an 11-year-old kid. My family friend, Kurt, like an uncle to me, jumped on me and put it out, like just with his body. He just tackled me and put it out. And it didn't go off. And you can actually see the mechanism, like the fuse box mechanism was exposed. It was about to explode. There's like right on me. Probably would have really messed me up. And just a little bit of the like spark making stuff is there. I think my mom might still, we kept it. We kept the corpse of the firework. My mom still might have it and might still have the t-shirt I was wearing that day with a hole in the armpit where the fuse was. But that was my very American firework story. If you have a story about almost getting killed by a firework, you are a bona fide American. They put it in the citizenship test now. Omar says, what do you put on your hot dog? I'm a pretty plain guy. Ketchup's fine. I will do any mustard that isn't French's yellow. I like the, you know, coarse ground mustards or weird mustards, but the French's yellow just doesn't do it for me. Not a pickle guy, so no pickles, no relish. Can't do onions. I've never had sauerkraut. I'd be willing to try it. And then, you know, then you get to the fancier stuff. Chili, love it, great. You know, beans, love it, great. Like, top it all up, you know, mushrooms or whatever. There's a place in LA called Pink's that's kind of a LA institution place that you can put like a whole bunch of stuff on your hot dog. Probably 80% of the menu I'm good with, but yeah, no pickle, no onion, no French's yellow. I'm open to just about anything else that would go on a hot dog. That is the mailbag. Bit of a weird one, but I will see you all tomorrow. If you're watching on YouTube, YouTube's going to go away for a little bit. I'm going to be out of town, so I'll be recording from the road, and I won't have video capability, but the show will still be up. So just go listen on Spotify or iTunes or whatever. We'll still do that, and I will be back on the 12th. I think it'll be the first day, or the 13th, one of those, will be the first day that I'm back on YouTube. So come check that out, and we'll be pretty close to camp. I'll see y'all tomorrow, or you'll hear me tomorrow, and as always, Skull.